Hello and welcome to the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton on WBCX FM 89.1 on your dial. Broadcasted Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. and rebroadcasted on Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. Interviewing people who are experts in a variety of professions, and yet all of them have one thing in common: outstanding communication skills. Today we're going to be talking about business communication and the skills that are required for that. I'll have to start off by saying that I spent 23 years in management. And over that period of time, I saw many people succeed, and I saw quite a number who did not. And I can practically say carte blanche that the ones who succeeded, the ones who got the good positions, the ones who advanced through management, the ones who were given promotions, the ones who got the best raises, the ones who had long tenure in their jobs, and the ones who got to the top were indeed people with outstanding communication skills. They're vital if you're trying to enter the workforce, sustain yourself in the workforce, or advance in the workforce. And, of course, communication skills, as we know, are vital interpersonally as well. Today, our expert is one who deals with this topic daily. He's a full professor of business administration at Brenau University, the host of WBCX FM. I'm referring to Dr. Bill Haney. Dr. Haney and I, as we came to know each other recently, found that we had so many common ties for one thing, like Dr. Haney, I spent some time in the college classroom as a professor at the University of Georgia. I was teaching business communication, as he does. I continue to teach business communication now to adult audiences with corporations and associations and a variety of other groups. So we have plenty in common. Plus, he also, as I'm doing now, hosts a radio program for WBCX FM. So it's great to have someone who has all that in common. Plus, one more thing, Bill, I think I'll mention that you and I talked about yesterday is how much we both love the college scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me here, Bill. It's an honor to be here with you. Yeah, we do have a lot in common, don't we?
Yes, we do. And one other thing that we have that I think our listeners would enjoy hearing about was how people might look at our doctorate degree. They may say a PhD, well, they just sailed on through. They were a natural for that to begin with. How about sharing?
How untrue is that?
Yeah, how about sharing a prediction about you in your high school years, and I'll tell one about me.
Well, you brought this up the other day to me and reminded me of my high school guidance counselor, and I remember his name, and I'm going to say it. His name is Mr. Duncan. I don't know if he's still around. This is back in, well, the late 1970s. And he told me, based on my academic record, that I had no chance at all of succeeding in college, and told me that I should go into the armed services or be a plumber or something like that. And I seriously considered his advice for a while. And I guess looking at my record, I could see how he would make that conclusion. But my parents had faith in me, and they said that they'll sponsor me my first semester at the junior college. It was St. Petersburg Junior College.
Trial balloons. See if you can make it.
See if I could. And you know what? I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was something I knew that was a good fit for me. And I attended successfully not only my first semester, but I don't know, 50 or 60 semesters after that as well. Ended up finishing my doctorate at Florida State University.
Which shows that predictions can be very off base.
Just a little.
In my case, I was a senior in high school. I was one of those incorrigible kids who was shipped off to military school along with my twin brother. And just about 3 weeks before graduation, as I was sharing the story with you yesterday, just about 3 weeks before graduation, my parents get a phone call from the headmaster of the school. My brother was named Ben, and they said, you can come up as you're planning to do and watch Ben graduate, but we're not sure Bill is going to graduate. I had a course called chemistry, which convinced me right away that I was not pre-med material. It convinced the prof very quickly as well. I was right on the borderline of not passing that course and not finishing high school. I truly think the professor just didn't want to see me another term, and believe me, I did not want to see him another term. All of which is to say, and particularly as you and I are talking about higher education today, and particularly since we're on a university campus and we many have many students who might be listening, don't let anyone else or any early indicators suggest that you cannot reach the potential that you want to reach.
Absolutely. Persistence is incredibly important in today's world, especially in higher education. So go after your goal and don't let anyone stop you.
Well said. And as you and I commented yesterday, PhD is not a sign of brilliance necessarily. It certainly wasn't in my case. Still isn't. but it's a sign of determination.
Absolutely.
And hard work. And as you say, that wonderful word, persistence.
Right.
Well, enough about how we barely made it here, Bill. Let's talk now about business communication. Let's start a little bit with something about your own academic background, how it was that you came to Brunel University.
Well, I arrived at Brunel University in August of 2000. I was a professor at a small university in West Palm Beach for nearly 10 years, and I was recruited here into administration as first department chair of the business department and then dean of the School of Business and Mass Communication after that. I was dean for 7 years. But my area of expertise, it's a strange area because my bachelor's degree is in psychology. My master's degree is in counseling psychology, and I'm a licensed psychotherapist in the state of Florida. I also have an MBA and then a doctorate in higher education with an emphasis in business administration.
You remind me of the old saying, he was killing himself by degrees.
Absolutely. I got a lot of letters after my name. And when you put that combination together, it's ripe for teaching classes in the area of industrial psychology, organizational behavior, interpersonal dynamics, and, of course, business communication. And so it's an unusual combination of degrees, but when you look at what is needed in the workforce, I think it's a terrific combination of degrees for the student who happens to sit in my classes. And we both know the importance of business communication, and it is an extremely important topic in the business workplace today.
Which is why I'm so happy you're here with us today. I mentioned at the outset, Dr. Bill Haney, that you host a regular WBCX-FM program. Tell us a little bit about that program, please.
Well, it is called Brunel Business Brief. It airs on Friday mornings at 9 a.m., and it is really, I happen to be the host, but behind the host of that show are the hardworking students of the SIFE team, the Students in Free Enterprise team. And I might say the award-winning SIFE team. Our Brunel University SIFE team has won a number of awards, national awards, for their service to the community. And so they put together this show. I happen to be the host, and I interview business experts in this area, Gainesville, and sometimes I even talk about topics that I might be interested in as well.
And your show airs when?
Friday mornings at 9 a.m. I think we're going to be picking that up again now that the semester has started, probably pretty quickly.
Well, I'm sure our listeners will want to tune into that. Thanks for explaining that. Well, Dr. Haney, let's set the stage about Brunel University itself. Brunel University is not what it might have been in 1878.
Oh, absolutely not.
Not at all. A little sleepy parochial institution in a rather non-cosmopolitan setting, limited to Gainesville, Georgia, its original location. So take a while, please, to describe for us the geographical reach that Brunel University has developed in the United States and elsewhere. And by the way, before you get into that, I'll have to say, in looking at your biographical sketch, your vita, I was amazed at the number of countries that you have been in and I suppose have worked in higher education.
It's been a blessing to have been in so many countries around the world, specifically Europe. But Brunel is reaching into parts of the world that could not have been possible in 1878 or whatever year it was founded. Back in that day, they were drawing students primarily from this region as a women's school. And there are only a handful of women's colleges left in the United States, and Brunel still holds that component true to its founding. So,
and there were over 100 at one time.
Oh, yeah. And there still are a handful, but we're still holding true to that part of our mission. However, there's an incredibly large arm of Brunel University that is reaching out to the world. And that includes online education as well. So we have this evening and weekend component. We have this online component. And now, just recently, we have been reaching into other parts of the world to recruit students to Brunel for these international cohorts, especially in the College of Business and Mass Communication. So we have students from, what, Taiwan and China, from India, from many countries in Europe. We even have a new student from Libya who is attending Brunel University in the MBA program. So we're honored to have that many students here with us this semester, and it's growing.
What a great part of education that is in itself. When I was in college, and possibly this wasn't the case with you, but when I was in college at Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi, we had almost entirely all Mississippians.
Right.
And I cannot remember, I really don't remember any international students at all. There were none.
I went to a small college in eastern Tennessee called Bryan College, and it was the same way. It was primarily from the southeast and primarily from Tennessee.
And so anything that we knew about international students, international life, international relations was what we heard in a lecture or read in a book.
And that has changed dramatically, not just here at Brunel University, but throughout the United States. More and more students are coming to the United States, especially in the area of business, and coincidentally, a lot of American students are going abroad for education as well. And it's exciting. It's exciting. It's helping to prove again that the world is a shrinking place.
The world is flat, as Thomas Friedman
That's
said.
That's right. That's right. Great book.
Well, where have you yourself been involved in education outside of the United States on behalf of Brunel?
Well, just recently, we were in Paris, France, at the American Business School there, and I gave a series of lectures at the American Business School in Paris, and it was very exciting. And as an anecdote, I'd like to tell a story about this auditorium classroom that I was lecturing in. And there were about, I would say, 200 or 250 mainly French students there. And I took a group of Brunel students. There were about 20 Brunel students. And we scattered the Brunel students throughout the audience. And I asked a question of the French students. I said, how many of you plan to come to the United States and work for American companies or work for an American company here in Europe? And nearly every French student raised his or her hand. And I turned to the American students. I said, there you go. There's your competition. And they speak three languages, too.
Amazing. Well, let's take just a minute to remind our listeners where we are and who our guest is.
Yeah, Bill, good morning. You are listening to the Communication Corner here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brunel University. And your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, is here speaking with Dr. Bill Haney, one of our own Brunel professors, about business communication here. So thank you for tuning into the Communication Corner, and I'm learning a lot, so let's get back to the information.
That's our wonderful program producer, Christina Rhodes, General Manager of WBCX FM. I couldn't do this program without her, and it's great fun and a privilege to do it with her. Getting back to international students, Dr. Bill Haney, we read in the press and the media and the internet, and we hear so often about comparisons between the quality of education in the United States, and let's focus now on higher education. The quality of education, higher education in the United States versus the quality of higher education internationally. What would be your evaluation assessment of that?
Well, there have been a lot of studies that have come out recently about that very topic. And let's face it, some of those studies are not flattering to American higher education.
But are they accurate?
I think some of them are, especially in the area of mathematics and science. I think where American higher education has excelled dramatically in comparison to other world educational systems is that we here in America value individualism, specifically in the area of creativity and innovation. And we encourage our students to think outside the box, and I hate using that cliche, but we encourage our students to think creatively to solve problems and come up with new innovation and strategies. Whereas in other educational entities around the world, that freedom of expression, creative expression, does not exist. It's more of a rote learning system.
And so it would be more of a one-way communication.
It is. I think that's a good way of putting it. So where we excel is in the area of creativity and innovation. Where we need to work on, of course, is in the area of well, memorization, science, mathematics, and the fundamentals associated with those topics. I think we're falling behind, and all of the polls that I have read seem to indicate the same. As an anecdote, we have a number of Chinese students come into our university and take quantitative method courses in business, and they seem to have no problem whatsoever in mastering college algebra and even beyond that into calculus and trigonometry and who knows, advanced statistics and analysis of variance. But our American students need a lot of encouragement in that area, and so they come into our classes, our college classes, vastly lacking in the area of college algebra. And we see often in, not just at Brunel University, but in many universities around America, college algebra is the end point of mathematics on the collegiate level. Whereas in other universities around the world, college algebra is the beginning point of mathematics. So we need to take a hard look at that here in America.
I liked very much your talking about the advantage of having familiarity with and even mastery of more than one language.
Absolutely.
I know that during my education, I was, through the doctoral program, I was able to take French, Spanish, German, and Greek. One of the things that I know about foreign language, the study of foreign language, is that it helps you learn your own language.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, too, had background. My parents, my mom especially, has a German background, and she grew up speaking German in her home and taught me a little bit of German. And I went through grade school and high school and into college speaking German, and I learned more about the English language studying German than I did in some of my English classes.
You do. You learn the derivation of words.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's lacking, too, as we watch some of our school systems cut back on the money used for these kinds of programs, like foreign language programs. We're seeing repercussions in other areas as well, other communication areas as well, including writing as well. So I think that school districts need to take a hard and fast look at where they're cutting back, and foreign language is not one area I would do.
No, and sometimes people refer to those as soft skills. Well, again, when we're talking about business communication, the predominance of what we need is in the range of soft skills, but without it, we can't apply any of the technology that we know.
If you look at every poll that is done with executive officers about what they look for in up-and-coming employees in business, you will find that it falls into three areas: written skills, oral skills, and interpersonal skills. So if you call those soft, I think that's a wrong way of putting it. Those are the needed skills, not soft skills.
Bill, as you think back to your early days in the classroom as a faculty member, your first days as a faculty member, I'm sure you had some big surprises about the level of students. I remember so well when I was teaching freshmen at the University of Georgia, when I first gave an exam, and there was a part, it was a good part where they did a good bit of writing. It was just not multiple choice. I was amazed at the lack of writing skills people who came into a university. I mean, this may sound minor, but sometimes the handwriting was practically illegible. The spelling was atrocious. The sentence structure. And these are people who, can you cure that in a four-year period?
Well, compounding that further today are the skills coming into the collegiate level that are relying on these short text bursts of information and using phrases and words that are not even spelled properly. Abbreviations and...
Such as the letters CU mean I want to see you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so when you see on a person's, on a student's paper, they're writing in ways that reflect a text message, you begin to wonder about whether or not you can fix that in 4 years.
Because I've heard the figure, just even within the last week or so, about how many text messages... a high school student will send.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's an over 100 a day, I think.
It's amazing. And in fact, I had a class today in business communications, and we talked about that very thing. We were talking about the fact that over the past, decade, communication messages have increased exponentially. But does that mean communication messages have improved in quality? And I would suspect that no, they have not.
Now, one of the things I often say when I'm conducting a business communication seminar, people ask me about the impact of the computer, and I said, well, I know in my case, I can make mistakes 5 or 6 times faster than I used
right.
to. And there are thousands of people who see my mistakes.
Get to see them, right, exactly.
Instead of just a few people. So technology doesn't necessarily... I love technology, and particularly for what it enables me to do in communication. It hasn't solved every problem, though.
Absolutely. And I think I brought this up to you the other day. I bring it up in some of my classes because, of course, part of my degree experience is in the area of counseling psychology. And if in fact that communication has improved, the quality has improved, then I think we'd see increases in the relationships, the quality of relationships that exist among people. But we're not seeing that, are we? We're seeing the divorce rate remain pretty stable, or anywhere between 45% and 55%,
mm-hmm.
depending on what part of the country we're talking about. That has not decreased or increased, and yet all these messages are increasing. So it's pointing out a fundamental flaw with the amount of messages that are being sent. We're relying on those messages to improve our, expediency. But in fact, I don't know if it's improving the quality of our life.
What does your business department do in those areas that you talked about that are so essential for management? You mentioned speaking,
right.
writing,
right.
listening. What type of curriculum and even practical training do students benefit from on that?
Any good business school like ours will have programs in the area of public speaking, writing skills, internships, as we do. We have classes in business communication and in speech. I think every course that we have in our business program is in some way students are required to get up and make a speech, have multiple papers that are corrected. But the advantage I think we have here at Brunel University is that we have a limited number of students in our class, so we can spend our time working with them individually. I've taught classes at big state universities. You have as well. And you know what it's like trying to grade the papers of 300 or 400 students. It's impossible. You can't spend that time. However, I've got 12 students in my class right now. I get to know their names. I get to know their strengths and weaknesses. I can correct them individually. I can push them right up to and a little bit beyond their limit because I know where that is.
That's a wonderful arrangement. And as a graduate student, I remember so well being in some classes at Ohio University where we had 300 students.
Yeah.
And there was no way that the professor would even know the names. He might know the names of 5 students on the front
row. Right, that's right.
They really made no effort to know the names. There was not much interaction.
That's right.
And it's a very impersonal type atmosphere, it tends to be that way. I suppose there's some instructors who can overcome that, but inherently it is structured to be rather impersonal.
And so the idea is, at any university, you have to be able to take the chance, both as a student and as an instructor, to go beyond, go right up to and beyond what you believe your limit is in the area of writing and in speaking and in communicating. And I think that occurs really well here at Brenau University.
One of the things you and I talked about when we attended the WBCX-FM Christmas dinner, you and I talked about having rather high standards for students.
Oh, yeah. We want to get into that, don't we, huh?
Well, it's an honor.
I have a reputation here, Bill.
That's right. Go ahead and keep that reputation. Don't lose it. We need that.
Well, what's challenging for me and for many professors is that not only do we have to be now content area experts in whatever we teach, but we also now have to be experts in the technology that it takes to run a classroom. For example, you just don't put something up on the board and expect students to write it down at their tables. It doesn't happen anymore.
Is there even a board anymore?
Yeah, and you got colored markers, but I rarely use it, to be honest with you. Everything is done with advanced slides and videos and communication through online platforms like Blackboard or eCollege or Convene. And so I have to be an expert in my content, but also I have to be an expert in the transmission of that content to the student. And that's frustrating at times because I know what I want to say. I'm good at saying it. It's the transmission method that is often used that kind of breaks down the process.
We're dealing with a generation that's MTV oriented.
Yeah.
Everything has to be high tech, colorful, fast paced, interesting, picturesque. There's no way that just handing somebody a handout and saying, learn that's going to get anybody
excited.
Well,
it is going beyond MTV now. I'm getting ready to start putting some of my lectures up on YouTube. We're doing Twitter. We're doing Facebook. It's amazing the means by which we communicate our content to the student. Ultimately, the student is responsible for learning the material, right? Ultimately, it lies completely with the student. But I play a huge role here. The responsibility of that communication is on me. It's my responsibility to get it to the student. Now, it's their responsibility to learn it. Sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't.
One of the expressions I've used for many years is you have to scratch people where they itch.
Okay.
And these people itch in the area of technology.
They do.
You cannot use the old type method. Most interesting, I have a granddaughter in a school in Savannah. St. Andrew's School. And St. Andrew's School made national headlines a few months back because they provided, through a grant, they provided an iPad for every student.
Isn't that amazing?
Including those in the preschool program. Now, the only difference is that my granddaughter, who is 6 and is in the preschool program, cannot bring her iPad home. The others can. And just imagine. Now, one of the questions this brings up to me is lecture as an instruction method, is that pretty much dead?
Well, I wouldn't say it's dead, but what is occurring is the augmentation of lecture with supporting proof, like videos, like Excel spreadsheet, expert testimony. I'll give you a perfect example. I'm taking a group of students to Guatemala in a few weeks. And you can't lecture about Guatemala as well as getting them on a plane and taking them there. And by the way, before we even go, we're doing an Uvu and Skype video conversation with a number of businessmen there in Guatemala to our students here in Gainesville, Georgia. Before we even get on a plane, we're interacting with them. Now, that says to me, the lecture is only part of the equation here. There are so many other technologies that you can bring into the classroom that can augment the content. And that's what we're looking at. And so as a professor, what I have to do is carefully choose those what? Those segments of what I believe are going to augment my material.
We're going to ask Christina to give us a short station break and station ID here.
Okay, you're listening to 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau, and this show is called The Communication Corner, hosted by Dr. Bill Lampton, and we're going to take just a quick little break. Stay with us.
Extraordinary lives from Brenau University.
I had everything going for me, a husband, a child, and a job I loved. And then things just fell apart. I got divorced, and suddenly my job as a teacher's assistant could no longer pay the bills. It was a terrible blow, but I didn't feel self-pity, only this overwhelming sense that this was my life, and I wanted to make it the best life I could for me and my son. So I went back to school and enrolled in Brenau University. At Brenau, I found classrooms full of people just like me, motivated adults who wanted to better their careers and their lives. In 1 year, I'll be a licensed school teacher with my own first grade classroom. Life can knock you down, but you can change that life. At Brenau University, you can make your life extraordinary.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online, register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on The Voice of Brenau.
I don't know about you, but I just love books, and there's thousands of good, used, gently handled and loved books available at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market Building on the square in downtown Gainesville. Next Chapter Bookstore is operated by Our Neighbor and offers housing and opportunities for men and women with disabilities. If you need more space for some more loved books, you can donate as well. Bring them by and they'll be glad to help you. Look for more books and good books at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market, on the square in downtown Gainesville.
Sean Miller here. Be sure to join me every Sunday for music from artists like Jamie Cullum, All Over It. Soundscape, Round Trip. Herbie Hancock, Rocket. That's Jazz Pulse every Sunday evening from 6 to 10 right here on The Voice of Brenau, WBCX.
Eric is a real student with big dreams.
I always knew I was going to college. My mom, she kept at me about my grades. She made me write my spelling words 5 times. Positive male role models? I didn't really have any. But my mom is strong. She and my aunts always told me, you gotta be the one to make it happen. Man, I've always worked. Can't mess around. Federal student aid? I heard about it at church. Filling out the free application wasn't easy, especially for a high school kid who didn't know what a W-2 was. But I got it done. What would I tell other kids? I would say, sit down and talk to your parents. Just go for it and see what happens. Don't give up on college because of money. My name is Eric. I'm going to study sports medicine. I'm going to be all right.
Are you going to college? Federal Student Aid, an office of the U.S. Department of Education, has $100 billion available to help you pay for college. Find out more at college.gov.
And welcome back to 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau University. You are listening to the Communication Corner here every Tuesday morning at 9 and rebroadcasting Thursdays at 6 a.m., and here's your host, Dr. Bill Lampton.
Thank you, Christina. And here we are with our guest, Dr. Bill Haney, professor of business administration at Brenau University.
Thank you, Bill. Just before the break, Bill,
we were talking about your upcoming trip to Guatemala. And then while the break was going on, I was mentioning to you that as I look back on how I had to learn international relations, and I was a history major in college, differed so much. We had someone stand up and talk for an hour. We took notes on what they said. We went to the library, and yes, we really checked out books. We checked
That's
out.
Right. It was an actual book.
It was an actual book. We checked out books. We read them, and we came back, and as the common saying was then, we regurgitated it all on a test and a little blue book. Okay, that sounds pretty antiquated, and I suppose it is. And I have to say, those who have the opportunity now to learn by being on the scene and being there with a professor who knows the country, who knows the customs, who knows the communication style, who knows the history, what a treasure that is. So say a little bit more to us about this upcoming Guatemala trip. We might want to go with you.
Oh, okay. We have plenty of room. And I learned, as you did, that sort of rote memory kind of thing.
Ho-hum.
And today, that's just not how it's done. I can't think of any subject that doesn't incorporate technology or alternative learning methods into the classroom. You know, when we were in college or certainly in high school or grade school, a big field trip would be going to the planetarium or something, and that's about it. But those days are gone. Field trips today are not just personal, where you actually get on a plane and you personally go to Guatemala or London or Paris or Rome or wherever it might be, but they can be virtual as well. So you sit in the classroom and you experience the culture through video communication with someone in another, where a guest speaker is coming to you live from a business office in Taiwan or in Beijing or Rome or wherever it might be.
Is this through Skype?
Skype or Uvu is what I primarily use, or we have other technologies.
I'm not familiar with that one. How do you spell that one?
O-O-V-O-O.
O-O-V-O-O. And that's similar to Skype?
It is. And it's used, I think, a little bit more in business because you can conference so many people in. And so that's what I teach in my classroom is Uvu. But we have an opportunity, because we live in the Atlanta area with such a great metropolitan airport, to take people to other parts of the world very easily. And so in a few weeks, I think it's the end of February, the beginning of March, I'm taking 21 students, and we're hopping on a plane, and we're doing some work in Guatemala. Now, get this. It's not just going there and getting a guided tour. Oh, no. We're going there to engage in business practices with local merchants. And the goal is to promote their business, whatever it might be, a coffee finca or a banana plantation or a textile cooperative. We're going to take those products and somehow figure out ways to incorporate them into the American economy. That's the goal of this class. It's not just going there and learning about it. No, we're going there to do something about it. And so that, not just the dynamic of the classroom has changed, but also the end result, the goal, the strategic goal of the learning process has changed as well. So those days of lecturing from a podium with old notes that you've used for 15 years are long gone. Classrooms today are a far more technologically advanced and a lot more dynamic interpersonally.
International travel is so incredibly educational, and it is interesting to see what other business people are doing in other countries. I remember
I have an anecdote about
go,
but
yeah,
this was incredible. At another university, I took a group of students, and it was a large group. I think it was about 30. We were studying counseling psychology, and we hopped on a plane and went to London and learned Freudian psychology in Sigmund Freud's London home, where his couch was right there in front of us, taught to us by an expert in Freudian psychotherapy. Now, you can't get more dynamic than that.
And realistic.
Absolutely.
Not textbook.
That's right.
Yeah, I was thinking of a trip that we took to Belize a year or two ago, and I can remember one vendor standing out in front of a display of his wares, and he said to the tourist, "Come on in here. I've got plenty of things that you don't need."
We're going to see a lot of that on our trip to Guatemala.
That's right. That's right. And then I remember another one had up a sign, "Broken English, spoken perfectly here." So you find that they know how to use humor in their salesmanship and marketing. Let's switch to something else, as fascinating as your Guatemala trip is, and we'll want to hear more about that, and I'm sure WBCX listeners will want a good report on it when you get back. Something else that I want to touch on is we've talked about some of the changes in higher education. One of the most noted changes is how the typical college student has changed. There was a time, and you and I both remember it, when the typical college student would come onto campus at age probably 18. Mm-hmm. They would stay there a consecutive 4 years. They would be there with people their age for the most part.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
Their education would be unbroken, and they got a degree in 4 years. By contrast, in my own family, I mentioned to you that after I had gotten my degrees and our children had gotten their degrees, my wife pursued hers and did so very happily at Brunel.
At Brunel.
Got her undergraduate and graduate degree here. Wound up teaching in the Oakwood area for more than 20 years. She's very indebted to Brunel, very grateful for it. And when she came to campus, she had a lot of apprehension. Here I'm someone in my 40s. My gosh, what are these young tykes going to think of me? She found in the first place that she did not stand out because of her age. There were many students well beyond that 18-year-old mark. And the assimilation into those groups was the classrooms and social life was all very natural. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what might be, for example, the average age of a college student now.
Well, by far, the average age of the typical college student in American higher education right now is well into their late 30s.
Late 30s?
Late 30s.
I remember when it was 27 and everybody thought that was quite a milestone.
No, if you look at the number of non-traditional students who are attending college class now, that is students who are taking either evening and weekend classes or taking online classes, they far, far outweigh the number of traditional students who are attending your Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. or your Tuesday, Thursday, 8:15 a.m. classes. By far, hands down. And in fact, a lot of colleges like Brunel have realized this and have started to cater, not started, have catered for quite a while to the non-traditional students. Brunel has led the way in non-traditional student higher education in the Atlanta area, offering classes in the evening and weekend format. Wow, I think back in the early 1980s. And so, and I'm telling you, if colleges don't jump on that bandwagon and have not by now, then they're limited to the number of students they're going to have because we're finding that not that the college, the traditional age college student is shrinking, but the other population is increasing so dramatically.
I would imagine, too, that the 10.5% unemployment rate has sent people back to finish their degrees or to get graduate degrees.
Well, in addition to that, you're finding many businesses are taking advantage of the certifications that professional agencies are offering, like, say, accounting, for example, the CPA, to have a certified public accountant, a CPA, and have that designation after your name is what businesses go after. And the only way to gain that certification is through attending higher education, a number of higher education classes. And there are a number of professions, like project management is another example, where you have to have a number of higher education classes on your transcript before you can even apply for that certification. And then on top of the classes, there are requirements after that. So businesses are driving students back into the college classroom. And it's been happening more and more as more and more certifications are coming about in the business world.
Well, it was interesting this morning. I had a phone conversation with someone I don't know. He called me from Florida, mentioned that he's 59 years old. He's had a practice for 20 years, I think he said, as a physician. He's now deciding to switch tracks. He hopes to complete his PhD by age 62.
Mm. Which a PhD at age 62,
yes.
Terrific. Isn't that exciting?
Yes, it
think
is.
Think of the wealth of knowledge that person is going to bring into the classroom with him that he could share with the other students there.
Oh, yes. It's It's absolutely incredible. And one of the things that has benefited not only education, but it's benefited all of people, it's benefited people individually, is that the numbers that we used to think were cutoffs are no longer cutoffs. For example, there was a time when somebody would have thought, I'm too old to go to college, mm-hmm. I'm 25, mm-hmm. or I'm too old to switch professions, I'm 35. And here's a guy who's now 59 years old, who's switching professions, wants to go into academic life.
The very first college class I ever taught was in November of 1987 at a university in Florida. I was 27 years old, and I was the youngest person in that room. Everyone in the room was older than me. Every student was older than me. And so you can't claim to know more than the other. You might have a credential after your name, but you can't claim to know more than the collective body of knowledge that was in that room. So my philosophy was this. I am the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage.
Hey, I got to copy that down. Of course, I'll always give you credit for it. Christina, remind our listeners where we are and who we're with, please.
Yeah, you're listening to the Communication Corner here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau. And you've been listening to your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, interview one of Brenau's own professors here, Dr. Bill Haney. And they're discussing business communication. And it's a great topic today, Bill.
Yes, and a great guest. Amazingly, we're in our last 14 minutes with so much more that we want to cover. Colleges and universities and Brenau, right at the forefront of it, have made the changes that they need to, as you say, teach students in the way that they want to be taught, teach them where they want to be taught. The old system was, you come to our campus, mm-hmm. we're not coming to you. That has changed. That's not acceptable anymore. In fact, where does Brenau have campuses in Georgia except in addition to Gainesville?
We have physical campuses located in Kings Bay, which is down along the coast north of Jacksonville. We have a campus in Augusta. We have a campus in Fairburn, south of the airport. We have a campus in Norcross, just north of the perimeter. And, of course, we have a campus here. I think I've covered them all. The biggest campus, the one that's growing the most, is our online campus, which is attracting students from all over the world.
Talk a little bit about that, please. How does somebody in Tasmania or wherever find out about your online education and get in on it?
I'll have to look that up. I don't know if we have a Tasmanian student. We might. I don't know. It's attractive for a student because they can attend the class at their convenience. So there are some people that are night owls. They enjoy and can learn most effectively at 11 p.m. I'm a morning person. I'm up at 4:30, 5 o'clock almost every single morning. I get more accomplished by 8 a.m. than I think most people accomplish the entire day, and I love it. And so I am online in the morning teaching my classes at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and they don't have to be there live. It's not a live process. It's an asynchronous process.
Christina's nodding her head. She gets emails from me at that hour. So some morning you want somebody to chat with, give me a call at 5:30.
Right. What a deal.
I'll be ready to hear from you.
And so I think the impression that people get is that online education must be easy because I don't have to leave my home to do it. And I can't emphasize enough how contrary to that bias or that stereotype is. It's a very difficult course of study. You have to be incredibly self-motivated to sit there and power yourself in front of a computer to do the work needed in order to accomplish that class. And the motto that we use here at Brenau University is accelerated, not abbreviated.
Ah.
And so we jam a lot of material into that 8-week class online, and we use a variety of lecture methods, including written communication. I use audio PowerPoints where they hear my voice while at the same time they're viewing the PowerPoints as they go by. I use video communication, WIMBA communication.
What is WIMBA?
WIMBA is a sort of an audio-visual method where students can either call in live and be part of a live class experience from all around the world. They could do this. or they can listen to and participate in pre-recorded programs that I happen to record of a live session that I did.
Is this spelled WIMBA?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And it's a sort of a plug into the learning platform we use called Blackboard. Blackboard is the online learning platform that Brenau University has chosen to use in its classroom.
Well, you know, you mentioned a minute ago about you like to get up and teach early and so on, but the other consideration here is, of course, that you can reach people in any time zone.
And that's true. It is limiting. I wish I could conduct a live session but with students who might be in Afghanistan, or they might be in California or Alaska. It's very difficult to ask a student to get up at 2 a.m. in Fairbanks, Alaska to attend a live session. So we try our best to shy away from that live synchronous kind of session. And that's why we favor the asynchronous kinds of learning sessions. But occasionally it happens when we find ourselves in situations where everyone is in a relatively close time zone, we can do that.
Dr. Bill Haney, over the past few decades, we've had a number of innovations that have, at least for a while, become what I would call the mantra of business in the United States and even internationally. I think of some of the terms that we've bounced around that we were all supposed to be bowing down towards: management by objectives, mm-hmm. total quality management, time management, the 1 minute manager, Six Sigma, and I'm sure
it goes on and on, doesn't it?
That's right. There are dozens of others, sort of alphabet soup. Now, what would you say might be the most current, popular operational theme in the business world, similar to some of those, and how do you evaluate it, or is there one?
Well, geez, that's a great question. I just completed some coursework at a university, and so I'm a little bit biased in my opinion about what this is going to be, and it's really not my area of expertise, but I seem to think that this is where a lot of profit is being made in business today, and that's in the area of the supply chain. When you look at, let's take Walmart, for example, you know, Walmart doesn't manufacture a thing, but they're the best supply chain the world has ever seen. They can get you a product that is manufactured in Brazil, and they can have it shipped to you in your store in a matter of days. And when you scan it there at the counter to check out and use your debit card, that scanning process will even tell the factory back in Brazil that you personally, Bill Lampton, have used that product and that Walmart should order one to replace it. That's how sophisticated
Amazing.
That supply chain is. And so while we can't charge too much more for a loaf of bread, where that company can make the money is to cut out as much of the middle people in that supply chain as they can. And so you're finding that companies are doing everything they can to shorten that supply chain up dramatically, and that's what Walmart has done effectively.
They've done it very effectively. When I drive from here to Columbia to South Carolina to see a daughter, and we go through Greenville, we pass there a distribution
yeah.
center, and my wife and I often say we wonder how many 100 trucks are out there.
And they always position them near interstates, crossroads of interstates, mm-hmm. right there, because it's very important to get those trucks right on the road to distribute the products right to the Walmart. It's amazing. It's a great supply chain.
Yes, it is. Switching topics, something you and I talked about just before we started today, is the importance of business etiquette. A person can graduate with a near straight A average. They can have wonderful extracurriculars. They can even have some good experience, like trips to Guatemala and mm-hmm. elsewhere. They have traveled internationally. Hopefully, they've learned different languages. One thing that could be missing, though, when this person goes out to job interview, or as they're moving up the ranks once they've gotten a job, one thing that's often critical is, how are they behaving when they're in the business luncheon, or the dinner with the CEO and his wife? Does the business communication department here give attention to business etiquette and its relevance, its importance?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I believe Julie Clay, offers a number of seminars in the area of business etiquette. You might want to talk with her about some of those issues. But I also know
I'll have to invite her to be a guest.
She should do it. And I know that Brunel University as a whole offers those kinds of seminars. But let me point back to a bigger issue regarding that topic, and that is the role of liberal education to a student in higher education. Liberal education is a student who is involved in a well-rounded education in the theater, in the arts, in science, in history, in mathematics. Someone who comes out of a degree program at the baccalaureate level who has the kind of credentials that makes that person well-rounded. Now, with all deference to my good friends and colleagues at the large state universities, they narrow their focus and force students into a very specific kind of degree program. Whereas smaller schools like Brunel University, we try our best to well-round that student in all the critical areas like math, science, and history, and art, and literature, and the arts as well. And with that comes a knowledge of important topics that are needed at the executive level, not just content area in business, but knowledge in other things as well. Even knowledge about the opera, for example, very important. So when you call yourself a college graduate, you should have some basic skills, especially in the area of art, history, science, math, and etiquette as well.
Truly the well-rounded person.
Right.
Many of us see books advertised that say they have the answers to our business solutions. There's some gurus who are out there. We see some of them interviewed on the talk shows, and we hear them interviewed on radio talk shows. Are there any that you would recommend? That
Bill Lampton.
Well, I can't hawk my own materials on my own show. Thank you, though. But are there any whose books and materials and videos and CDs and DVDs you'd recommend we look at?
I like Friedman, Thomas Friedman. Mm-hmm. I really have enjoyed reading his work. I think that it's important for a person when they're trying to get a well-rounded education to pick books, literature, newspaper articles that fall throughout the spectrum from conservative to liberal to moderate, to be able to view the entire spectrum
of opinion. What you agree with and what you disagree with.
Absolutely. Your ability to speak about things you may not agree with is just as important as your passion associated with those things you do agree. So read it all. Read it all. Now, I enjoy listening to books in my car. That's how I do it. I read so many papers from students, I don't want to read anything else. So I listen to my books, and I've enjoyed a vast spectrum of different books right now. And so I would recommend them all.
Harvey McKay is one that I have a great deal of respect for. He's got about 5 books out. He's, for many years, has been head of an envelope company in Minneapolis, I believe. And so he writes from managerial experience. He's I've met Harvey before. He's a wonderful, gracious person as well. His books are written in very much a popular vein, and yet they have a good, solid message for any business person, in my judgment. Dr. Bill Haney, I want to thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
This has been a real revelation into business communication, higher education, Brunel University, international studies, practical application of business theory, and we're all grateful that you came to be with us to do that.
It's my honor. Thank you for having me, Bill.
Well, now that we've come to the close of our very productive conversation with Dr. Bill Haney, professor of business education at Brunel University, I again want to thank him. And to our listeners, here's a reminder. You'll want to visit my blog, where you will have access to a write-up about Dr. Haney. And by the way, a picture of the two of us together. No extra charge for that. You'll have the write-up, a photo, and more important, you will have the audio, the podcast of this conversation, which we hope you will recommend to your colleagues and friends. All you have to do is give them the link to the blog, and they'll be able to share what Dr. Bill Haney has brought to us. The blog address, thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, the blog address, which I hope you share with your friends and business colleagues, is thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, it's been a pleasure to be with you. Give me a phone call, 678-316-4300. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton.